Parshas Nasa. Parshas Nasa. What's characteristic about Parshas Nasa?
Longest parsha.
Longest parsha of the entire Torah, right? And it typically comes after Shavuos, right? Most years, it's always the parsha after Shavuos. So the one thing about Shavuos, which is a little bit unique in terms of in its contrast to other Yom Tovim and the week after, is the fact that in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, right, there was a halacha, there was a special of tashlumin, of the makeup period of bringing the sacrifices. So there was a special sacrifice on every yontov, in Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. With Pesach and Sukkot, the 7 days to make up. So if a person couldn't bring it on the first day of the yontov, they had the makeup period for that throughout the entire yontov, which was called the tashlumin, the makeup completion part of the yontov, where they could continue bringing the korban throughout the rest of the yontov. Now Shavuos is only one day. Right, it's only one day. So if a person missed bringing the chagiga on Shavuos, so then what do they do? So the answer is, the Gemara says that they also have a makeup period of a week afterwards. There's a week afterwards, of a week after Shavuos. In other words, there's still a little bit of the energy and the light and the spirit of the Yom Tov still in the week which follows after Shavuos as well. And certainly in times of the Beis Hamikdash, it facilitated the ability to be able to bring the carbon chagiga for those 7 days afterwards as well. The way this maps out practically today, obviously we don't have kabbonis today, we're not doing any tashluma today, but the one practical application of this halacha nowadays is the fact that there's no tachanun for the entire week after Shavuos. So there's an indication, there's a remez, an indication of a certain light, a certain spirit of Shavuos, which is still in the air after Shavuos. So I asked the question, which is, what's unique about this parasha? So Parshas Nos is the longest parasha. So the Chidush Harim says that the significance or the remez, the illusion of the fact that the Shavuos is still in the air, it's the longest parasha right after Shavuos. It's the longest parasha really bringing to light and bringing to the fore the idea of the Torah Shebiksav. The Torah Shebiksav is really center and front and center over here right after Shavuos, after we've just celebrated the revelation at Sinai, and here you have the longest parasha right afterwards as well. So that's one aspect of Naso being Meram is alluding to the to the Torah Shabbat, to the Torah Shabbat and the Revelation, etc. But there's other things as well. The Medrash Rabbah on this week's parasha is the longest. It's the longest Medrash Rabbah in comparison to all the other parashas. It's like, I think it's an entire volume. There's so much Torah Shabbat Peh. There's so much Torah Shabbat Peh on the parasha. Right, on Parshas Naso, it's the longest one. It's incongruent in comparison to the other parshas. It has the most Torah Shebal Peh, the most Medrash on this parsha. Again, pointing to the idea, the light of Shavuos, the light of Torah is still in the atmosphere. There's still a light of Shavuos in the air for the entire week afterwards. And furthermore, there's also a section of Zohar called the Idra Rabbah, which was written by Rav Shimon bar Yochai, revealing tremendous mysteries and mysteries about creation, which is also connected to Parshas Naso as well. So you have three dimensions. You've got the Torah Shebiksav being highlighted in Parshas Naso, the written Torah. You have the Torah Shebal Peh, longest Medrash, and you also have Torah Senister as well, the hidden parts of the Torah as well, highlighted and brought to the fore in the parasha right after Shavuos. So there's a lot of allusions over here to Shavuos still in the air. So I don't want to, you know, just like leave Shavuos in the dust and not continue with the theme of Shavuos. So, but I've got more to say as well on that as well. The very last pasuk of the parasha also alludes to revelation and Har Sinai as well. The very last pasuk of the parasha, if you zoom forward to the last pasuk of the parasha. It's in chapter 7, verse 89, right? Verse 89, I think it's really, yeah. It says, when Moshe arrived at the tent of meeting to speak with him, to speak with Hashem, describing the communication that Hashem had with Moshe in the tent of meeting. When Moshe arrived at the tent of meeting to speak with him, to speak with Hashem, he heard the voice speaking to him from atop the cover that was upon the Ark of the Testimony, from between the two Kruvim, and he spoke to him. Now this pasuk is nothing less than revelation. Now, people that, you know, less familiar with or not, they think less of the concept of the revelation going on constantly through the desert. And it was the first time the revelation of Hashem, the first time the words of Hashem were expressed to the Jewish people was at Har Sinai. And they heard the Aseret Dibros, the Ten Commandments. But the communication between Hashem and man and the communication, the Torah, was going on throughout the entire journey through the desert. So the only time that the Jewish people heard Hashem speak directly was at Har Sinai. But the revelation and the communication of the words of Hashem to Moshe, to the Jewish people, was going on constantly. And the place that took place was in the Ohel Moed, and it was in the Tent of Meeting. Moshe would go into the Tent of Meeting on a frequent basis and speak to Hashem and hear all the mitzvahs and hear all of the instructions. Not all the mitzvahs were given initially at Har Sinai, because mitzvahs were still being given throughout the journey through the desert. The mitzvahs were given. But that communication and that, the communication, the revelation, was always taking place inside the Ohel Moed. And that's what this pasuk says. So it's, you know, it's not by accident that we have another allusion to revelation. Here it's revelation of Hashem to Moshe, to then deliver these words to the Jewish people. But this is the last week, the last pasuk of the parasha. There's a couple of things just on that, on this dynamic over here of how Hashem spoke to Moshe in the tent of meeting. So Rashi brings the Medrash, the Gemara, that when the voice came down, the voice actually came down from Shemayim, and the actual process with which he heard the voice, he would come into the tent of meeting. The tent of meeting is the section before the Holy of Holies. Right, that's what the Holy of Holies, where the Ark of the Covenant is. They're in Kodesh, and then he would come into the area before that, called the Ohel Moed, the Tent of Meeting, and he would stay there, and then the voice of Hashem would come down, descend down from Shemayim, and then come down to between the Kruvim, and then the voice would then take a 90-degree turn, and then come out of there, and then Moshe could hear it inside the Ohel Moed. And the Gemara says, Rashi says, the sound was very strong. It was a very, very strong sound. There was a sound, the sound of the call of Hashem. Let's see what it says this. It says that, I think it's in this Rashi over here. Yeah, it says that Moshe ba el Ohel Moed, the Moshe would go into the Ohel Moed, tent of meeting. V'sham shemeya es kol haba mi'al ha-kaporos. And there he would hear the sound which would emanate from upon the kaparas, from upon the cover of the Aron Kodesh, mibein shnei keruvim, from between the two keruvim, hakol yotzei min haShemayim, the voice would come down from Shemayim, lebein shnei keruvim, to between the two keruvim, umishom yotzei leol moed, and from there it would go into the Ohel Moed. And further down in the Rashi is of Yishma Zakol, he heard the sound, he heard the voice, yochol kol nomuch. You may think it's just a low voice, a quiet voice. No, Talmud Loma as a call, the voice, the sound, the same call, who a call shenidbar ima besina, the same sound, the same voice which spoke at Sinai. The kashemige lepesach haynifsa, but when it came to the entrance of the tent of meeting, to the outside, the sound stopped. There was no audibility of the sound outside the Ohel Moed. It would not go outside the Ohel Moed. So the people, anyone who's standing outside the Ohel Moed, couldn't hear it. So the sound was strong inside the Ohel Moed. Moshe could hear it, but no one else could hear it outside. So the truth is the Darkei Musa of Naiman says, in his Sefer Darkei Musa, he says that there's a tremendous message in this. Because what was the reason why the people couldn't hear it outside the Ohel Moed? Was it because it couldn't be heard? No, it could be heard. It was loud. There was an inability to be able to hear it. And it teaches us that if a person, you know, in order to be able to hear the words of Hashem, we have to have a spiritual sensitivity. No matter how loud the voice could be, if a person is dull, if their emotions and their spirit is dull, the voice could be so loud, but they're deaf to that voice. So we've got a person that has to have a certain receptivity in their neshama, in their soul, in their spirit, to be able to hear the words of Hashem, which are speaking to them. The truth is, if you think about it, the words of Hashem are speaking to us constantly. We open up a Chumash, we open up a Gemara, we open up all of the Sfarim. The words of Hashem are so strong and so powerful and so articulate. They're speaking to us constantly, but we're just kind of deaf to it. It's a sad state of affairs, but that's a remez over here. The voice was strong inside the Ohel Moed, but they couldn't hear it outside. That's one point. Another idea which I saw from Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, one of the Ponovitcher Rosh Hashivas, he says that the sound of the voice of Hashem came down to between the Kruvim and then did a 90 degree turn to Moshe. But it first came down to the Kruvim. So he said the following. He says, the Torah can be taught from the best Rebbe in existence, Hashem, to the best disciple in the world, Moshe, Rabbeinu, under the best conditions in the Holy of Holies. That's where it came down. But the receiver has to be childlike, because the Kruvim looked like children. The Kruvim have a childlike face. The receiver has to be childlike. In order to learn Torah, we need to maintain the childlike enthusiasm and the childlike innocence that will allow us to accept Torah and integrate it into our personalities. It's a beautiful idea. Just being like a child, being innocent like a child, and to receive it, to be able to be a receptacle for the Torah. So that's how the voice was coming to Moshe in the old Moed. And again, another example of revelation here at the end. Be careful, this little Y over there. Another example of revelation here at the end of the parasha. Now, I wanted to say, I saw something on Shavuos, a very insightful discussion just regarding the revelation, and the Moshe being the intermediary, because this is what we're saying. It's another reminder of Moshe Beinu being the intermediary between Hashem and the Jewish people. So I was looking at this, there's a Pachad Yitzchok Maimer, Ruhutna, and discussing the role that Moshe played in and the Nevuah, the special prophecy of Moshe that he had in speaking to the Jewish people. And this is a very, very important dimension of revelation as well, which maybe also gets like overlooked a little bit, not focused upon so much. You know, we speak much about the revelation and the Ten Commandments, the Aseret Dibros, but there's a dimension of revelation, and specifically the role that Moshe plays in revelation, and as the intermediary to us, and it's an essential component of our belief and our emuna in the Torah and the Torah in the divine origin of the Torah. So the Rambam, so the Sefer Ikrib, Rav Yosef Albo, quotes the Rambam, and the Rambam says in the Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, in the foundations, we did this last year on Sunday mornings, but talking about revelation, talking about belief in Moshe, etc. So the Rambam says, I'm reading this from the Sefer Ikrim's quote over here. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu alav hashalom lo aminu ba Yisrael. Moshe, the people didn't believe in Moshe mipnei ha'osa sha'asa, because of the miracles which he performed. The basis of our belief and our trustworthiness, our trust in Moshe as being the conduit, of the Torah to the Jewish people, it's not based upon any miracles and signs that he performed. The reason is, because people who believe, al pi osas, who believe based upon signs and miracles, yesh belibun dofe, can have misgivings and doubt, because maybe he's a miracle worker, maybe he's a magician, maybe he's a wizard, maybe he's able to do certain things, which enables him to be able to tell us these things, and maybe that's what he is. So therefore, there's always going to be misgivings based upon miracles and signs. Because he says, because maybe he's doing it through magic or witchcraft. So then what is the basis of the belief in Moshe? Why did the Jewish people believe in Moshe? I mean, think about this for a second. We're talking about it here, this last pasuk of the parasha, that Moshe was constantly going into the old Moed, hearing the communication of Hashem, but no one was there to be able to testify that was really happening. People trusted him. People trusted him. He came out and delivered the message and taught the halachas and taught the mitzvahs. But who, you know, chas v'shalom to even think to say these? I'm just reading the Rambam over here. But how do they trust him? What was the basis of their trust in him? Rambam says, on what basis did they believe in him? They believed in him because of another element, another aspect, or another element of Maimed Har Sinai. She'ineinu ro, our eyes saw. For Lozara, and not a stranger's eyes saw. For Ozneinu Shamu, our ears heard. For Lo Acher, and no one else heard. We heard it ourselves. There was national revelation. The entire people saw and heard. For Lo Acher, Ha'esh, we heard the storm. We saw and heard the Esh, the fire on the mountain. We spoke about that last week. The Akolas, the sounds. For Lapidim, and the lightning. And here's the punchline. Umoge, Moshe, Nigash, El Arafel. And we saw Moshe going in to the cloud, V'hakol medaber elof, and the voice of Hashem speaking to him. We heard Hashem speaking to Moshe. We could hear with our own ears, Moshe, Moshe, that Hashem was calling him. And the Medrash says, whenever Hashem called Moshe, he would always call him in this endearing way, Moshe, Moshe. And the Jewish people heard the words, and they heard the following words, Leichem olehem shuvu lechem lo'aleichem. They heard Hashem say to Moshe, tell the people to go back to their tents, go to their tents. Va'atapo amodi modi, and you'll stand over here with me. Va'adabri lecha, and I'll speak to you and tell you, as kol mitzvahs, all the mitzvahs, the chukim and the mishpatim, meshetalamdin, that you're going to teach them. We heard Hashem say that to Moshe, he says. We heard Hashem say to Moshe, tell the people to go to their tents, and you'll stand here with me, and I'll teach you the mitzvahs, and then you'll teach those mitzvahs to the Jewish people. That's incredible. That's an incredible element, an incredible ingredient in the revelation. That it's not just the fact that we heard Hashem speak to Moshe, but we heard Hashem designate Moshe as the shliach, as his agent, as his intermediary, as his agent. We heard those words like, you know, you hear the boss. If a manager comes over to you with an instruction for the boss, he'll start saying, well, did he really say that? But if you overhear the boss telling the manager, listen, you know, go tell Rob X, Y, or Z. So when Rob hears from the manager, he can't doubt that it came from the boss. That's what it is. It's a very, very, it's a very foundational line over here. It's a foundational line in the revelation. There are psukim which back this up. We're not going into the psukim right now. If you look and say for Devarim, in Parashas Devarim, also they're discussed in Veschanon. They're discussing the revelation once again. So there's a lot of verses which also, this is all based upon those verses over there. But I wanted to bring that out. I just thought it was a very powerful concept, a very, very important element, discussing revelation and discussing this role that Moshe plays in his ongoing communication with Hashem and the ongoing receiving of the law from Hashem in the Ol Moed, which is right over here at the end of the parasha. So we have a whole parasha over here, which is just dripping with revelation, dripping with revelation. It's the longest parasha, longest medrash, Idra Rabbah. Last pasuk in the parasha is also revelation. Shavuos is in the air. The question, though, is that when you look back at the passage right before this last pasuk, the passage right before this last pasuk is all about the Nesiim. It's all about who are the Nesiim? The Nesiim are the princes of the tribes, the heads of the tribal leaders. And this is actually taking place at the final day of the inauguration, the inauguration of the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the desert. This is placing this historically. This is 1 year after they left Mitzrayim, and this last section of the parasha. It's a very long section. It's really what makes up the parasha to be very, very long. If you go back to 767, it says that. 765, let's say the beginning of the parasha. It was on the day, on page 765, it was on the day that Moshe finished erecting the tabernacle, that he anointed it, etc. And then verse 2, the leaders of Israel, the heads of the father's household, brought offerings. They brought offerings. The heads of this tribe brought offerings. And the Torah goes on to describe in tremendous detail all the offerings that the heads of the tribes brought to the Mishkan on the day of the inauguration. And what stands out so obviously is the actual nature, the actual contents of those offerings were identical for every head of the tribe. Every head of the tribe brought the identical set of offerings. And it's always the conversation point on the parasha, why the Torah repeats it over and over and over again, the same description of the same offerings brought by each one of them. It would have been sufficient just to simply say that they all brought, each one of them, the following, without going into the details of what they brought. And that's the question. But the Torah nonetheless goes out of its way to describe in detail and say everything, repeat it over and over and over again. And the reason is, one of the reasons given that the commentary is right, is that even though externally, the offering was identical to the next tribal head, but the inner kavanas, the inner intentions, the motivations that each one had was different. And the Medrash says each one of them had different motivations, different spiritual motivations for what, not motivations that selfish motivations, different kavon is different foci in terms of how they're going to dedicate that particular offering. It's like, you know, a yisker appeal, right? So yisker, let's say there's a standard amount which everyone has to give for a yisker appeal, let's say it's $180. And everyone says, okay, I'll give 180, I'll give 100. And it's all the same. But the kavanah is the person's intentions behind it. One person's thinking, I'm doing this in memory of this person. This person, I'm doing in memory of that person. This person, I'm doing in memory. So the inner kavanah, the inner focus is unique for each one of them. And it teaches us, it underscores the importance of the intent. It focuses, the external behavior and the mitzvah is essential, but it focuses, the ikkah is rachmana liba boyi. Hashem wants the heart, he wants the emotion, he wants the intent, the kavanah. So, of course, we have to do the action of the mitzvah, but after we do the action of the mitzvah, it requires the proper kavanah and the purity of thought and mind in doing that mitzvah as well. And that's why it's repeated over and over again. But again, the question is why is the pasuk of Revelation and Moshe's experience in the old mode, why is that tagged on at the end of this whole passage? It's tagged on. It's at the end of the entire thing, the entire, you know, all of the offerings, then on page 773, the total, how much was given altogether, and the tag on verse at the very end of the parasha is the revelation of Moshe inside the Ol Moed. What's it doing over there? What's the significance? What's the message of this pasuk of Moshe's experience inside the Ol Moed? Why is that being tagged on to this whole passage of the Nesim, of the tribal gifts? So I saw this in Moznaim LaTorah, commentary on the Chumash, and he quotes a Medrash, Vayikra Rabbah, and this was not the first time that the tribal heads brought offerings. The first time this happened was at the time of the actual construction, the building of the Mishkan, and the donations which were all given for the building of the Mishkan, and there were tribal heads there bringing as well. The uniqueness, or the common denominator between the two of them, the offerings given at that time when the actual were building the Mishkan was different. This is the inauguration ceremony for the inauguration of the actual functioning of the Mishkan. It's a different set of offerings, a different set of donations. The ones for the building of the Mishkan consisted of gold and pearl and precious stones and all the different elements, all the different things which were needed for the building of the Mishkan. So they were all different in that case there. But the common denominator between the two sets of donations, the common denominator between the two of them is that the tribe of Levi and Moshe was not involved in those donations. He's not involved over here, and he wasn't involved in the donations for the building of the Mishkan either. And the Medrash discusses this. The Medrash discusses what Moshe's reaction was and how upset he was that he wasn't able to participate in these inaugurations. Now, the truth is the Chassam Sofer says that he wasn't allowed to. Shevet Levi, tribal Levi were not allowed to participate because they weren't involved in the Chet Egel, the sin of the golden calf. And one of the major dimensions of the Mishkan of the Tabernacle is a kapara, is an atonement for the cult for the golden calf. So Shevet Levi were excluded from that. Therefore, Moshe really couldn't bring donations, couldn't bring a gift. But he was upset. He felt sad. He was saddened by the fact that he couldn't bring. So the Medrash says, Reb Tanchuma Pasach, Yesh Zav Rav Paninim. Pasuk of Mishlei says, Proverbs, there's gold and there's an abundance of precious stones, but Kli Yaka Sifse Das. But the most precious vessel is lips of understanding, lips of wisdom. People can have gold and people can have precious stones and pearls, but the most precious vessel of all is Sifse Das, is lips of wisdom. Lips of wisdom. So the Medrash says, Benosha Ba'olam. It's common in life, in the world, that people can have silver and gold and precious stones, etc., and all of the different beautiful things in the world. But Tova Vadas Embo, but the person doesn't have any true goodness or wisdom within him. So Makadiyah Yeshla, what acquisition does he have? He has all of the wealth, he has all of the possessions. What does he really have? As a mashal, Deya Kadisa Machasarta, that knowledge you've acquired, what are you lacking? If you have knowledge and wisdom, what do you lack? If you're lacking wisdom and understanding, what do you have? So again, back to the story over here. They brought gold. Hakol Avinu Nedvasim LeMishkan. They all brought gold to the Mishkan. Zahav. And they brought Rapidin, and they brought many precious stones as well. These were the donations of the Nesim, of the tribal heads. This is, again, referring back to the actual building of the Mishkan, but it applies here as well. They all brought. But Kli Yoka Sifsei Das, however, a precious vessel, a lips of knowledge, Lefi Shaisa Nashashal Moshe, Guma Allah, because Moshe was upset. Amar Kol Haviyu Nedvasa the Mishkan. Everyone else is bringing all of these donations of the Mishkan, and I haven't brought. Hashem says, don't worry about Chayecha, Shedeburcha Chaviv Alai, Yosem Nekol. By your life, your words are going to be more precious and more precious than all of this combined. Shemukula Lekara Adiba Moshe, because the only one he spoke to was Moshe, and the only one who delivered the words to Hashem, of Hashem to the Jewish people is Moshe. His words and his lips, his Sifsei Das, are the most precious of all. Therefore, don't be forlorn that you're not bringing any sacrifice, any offerings over here. Your role for the Jewish people, your role for me, your Sifsei Das, your lips of wisdom, your words of wisdom and teaching for Klal Yisrael, this is the most precious thing you can have, and you have that gift. And therefore, that's the explanation, says the Mizraim Latorah. That's the reason why this pasuk is tagged on at the end of the whole passage of the Nesim of the princes. Because after going through all this, it's a repeat of what happened earlier in the actual donations for the Mishkan. Moshe, again, like, he sees all of the Nesim bringing all of the offerings to the Mishkan. He's not there. A reminder, don't worry about that. Don't be forlorn. You have so much more to give, so much more to give. You are my agent. You're my shliach. You're the deliverer of the words of Hashem to my people. And therefore, that's why the pasuk of him going into the Olmo to receive those words is tagged on at the end of the parasha. And it's a beautiful lesson. It's a very, very powerful message to us of how precious words are. How precious words are. And how even the shortest of words, the simplest of words, can have such a major impact on people. And you think about this. I have a book over here called Growth Through Torah by Rabbi Zelig Pliskin. It's a beautiful book on the parasha, but I just happened to see this. He says, just in terms of appreciating the power of words. Now, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who is Rabbi Yisrael Salanter? He's known as the founder of the Musav movement. The impact he had on generations and the world of the learning of Musa is huge and is massive, right? But it says over here that the pivotal moment which led him to become the person he was and the influence he had in giving Musa and teaching Musa, Rissel Salanter used to relate that a single sentence he heard from his Rebbe, Rabbi Zundel of Salant, made a total change in him. Rabbi Zundel called him over and said simply, he says, Yisrael, learn Musa and you'll become a God-fearing individual. Learn Musa, and you'll learn to fear Hashem. Now, short words, but those words, he says, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, when I heard my Rabbi order me to study Musa, it entered my heart like a burning flame. These few words, which had tremendous impact on Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, greatly affected the lives of all the future disciples of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and their students until this very day. Learn Musa, and you'll learn to fear Hashem. And, you know, it's unbelievable. It's like those few short words of wisdom. Sifsei, Kliyaka Sifsei Das. How precious are Sifsei Das, a lips of wisdom, a short word of wisdom. I was talking to someone yesterday. I was talking to someone, gave me, it was a business kind of purse conversation I had. And there was just a short word. It doesn't make a difference what he said. Just the little tiny sentence he said to me was so wise and so smart. I realized afterwards, like, it's amazing how much impact and far-reaching are words of wisdom to people. Words of insight, words of wisdom can completely transform a person's life. So in as much as all of the largesse and the materialism and the gifts that we have from Hashem, the physical things, the money and all of the things which we have should be used and directed towards helping other people, helping the world, but never to underestimate the power of a simple word, the power of just simple, short words of wisdom delivered in a sensitive way, in a smart way, in a way which is going to be received. But those words are more precious than anything, more precious than gold, more precious than pearls. And that's the message over here, that Sifsei Kliyaka is actually a name of a commentary on the Chumash. Kliyoka, precious vessel, is sifsei das, our words of wisdom. That's what we learn from over here. So maybe we be zocha to appreciate our words of whatever words of wisdom we have. We all have words of wisdom. To appreciate the words of wisdom we all possess and cherish those words and share them and appreciate the impact those words of wisdom could be having upon other people. And with that, we will be zocha to continue living the light of Maimon Har Sinai, not just for 1 week afterwards, but for the entire year and for our entire lives.